Welcome to Absolutely Intercultural, and I wonder if you can guess what that was. No, it's not a Maori welcome at the start of an important rugby international game. It is, in fact, the Shouting Men from Finland, and they're introducing the theme for today's show, which is the Nordic region. What ideas do you associate with the Nordic countries? Modern, well-off, expensive, welfare state, doer, depressed? Well, obviously, living in the north of Finland makes the men want to shout and wear ties made out of old rubber tires. But first, let's be absolutely yours and have some feedback from you. Our piece last time about the importance of saving face in China as against the more direct approach of the Germans struck a chord with Jean, who said,
"Hi Anne, hello Lawrence. I've just been listening to your podcast, your very wonderful podcast with the girl from China. I'm a regular listener and I like it very, very much. It reminded me very much of something that happened to me when I first came to Germany. I've been here quite a long time, but when I first came, my mum and dad came to visit me from Manchester, and there was a little bit of food left over, just enough for one person, and I asked my father, 'Would you like this, Dad?' And he said, 'Oh, no.' I asked my mother, and she said, 'Oh, no.' Then I asked my German boyfriend, and he said, 'Oh, yes, I'll have it.' And afterwards, they were horrified, and they said, 'He's so impolite, he's so impolite.' And it made me realize what she said about Germans being very direct, that it's true, but also, I mean, isn't that more honest? And it got me thinking about lots of, well, intercultural stereotypes that we have. I think Germans are very, very funny. I have a good laugh here. I work about 150 kilometers away from you at the University of Applied Sciences, near the Dutch border. We have lots and lots of international students. And I'd very much like to work together with you, and I hope we can get something going, some kind of collaboration. Okay, bye then. Thank you very much."
Well, Jean, we're always open to new ideas, so just get in touch. And if you want to send us a voicemail, then please do so. Our address is contact@absolutely-intercultural.com. We also got some more comments on our blog at absolutely-intercultural.com, mainly from Spanish people recommending that we eat Spanish food while in Spain, though I don't think that the fast food restaurants are quite as bad as Sergio makes out. There was also a lot of support for the Spanish siesta, except from Marta, who usually wakes up feeling angry after her siesta. And finally, we got a couple of emails from Paul in the US, who says the podcast is helping him in his studies. If there's anything you think we should be looking at, Paul, then just get in touch. You mentioned the issue of disparate ethnicities, and we'll be touching on that in today's show, as well as in future shows, so stay tuned. Back to today's show, when we'll be hearing why a Norwegian blogger has two blogs, how it is now easier to change your name in Denmark, and about a library in Sweden where, instead of checking out books, you can check out people. So, first, let's go absolutely cultural and travel up to Bergen in Norway to find out why Thomas Brevik runs two blogs. I'm now talking to Thomas Brevik, and he is in Bergen. And perhaps, Thomas, you can tell us what your job is.
I'm the head librarian in the Norwegian Naval Academy, which is just a glorious way of saying I'm a librarian and I work in an academic library.
Now, we're not going to talk about books, because the reason that I got in touch with Thomas is because he has a blog, or to be more exact, he has two blogs. Now, why do you have two blogs?
Well, I started out blogging in Norwegian because I wanted to reach my fellow librarians here in Norway, and I thought most of what I wanted to write about was more interesting to Norwegian librarians than anybody else. But after a while, I started to encounter a discussion in the sort of international bibliobloggosphere, as we call it, that was so interesting that I wanted to contribute, and I couldn't do that in Norwegian, basically, because very few people outside Norway speaks or understand Norwegian. So I started an English language blog to be able to reach English-speaking librarians and discuss the issues that confronts libraries today there.
And this isn't an entirely neutral thing to do, is it? Because some of your colleagues discuss very much whether you should communicate in Norwegian or English. What are the issues that they're talking about?
Well, the thing is that a lot of librarians in Norway are not very comfortable with English as a professional language, and they feel that they are left out of the discussion, and they have problems communicating anything that they want, translating it from English to Norwegian to communicate it to their public or their politicians. And that, of course, is a problem. We can't really demand that people should know English as good as that they can use it as a professional language. So the issue was very much in the air this winter because there was published a doctoral thesis about the value of public libraries, which was very interesting, and it was published in English, and a lot of librarians were very frustrated because they felt they didn't have the access to the content of this thesis because it wasn't published in Norwegian. So that was a lot of discussion around that.
And how many people are there in Norway?
We are about 4.5 million people in Norway right now.
And we are 5 million approximately in Denmark. And for people who don't live in the Scandinavian area, could you explain a little bit about the relationship between the different Scandinavian languages?
Well, Norwegian, Swedish and Danish are fairly similar. They sort of have the same basis in the Germanic languages. But they have, of course, differences. We do understand each other's written language far better than we understand the spoken language. The Swedes and the Danes tend to have problems understanding each other, and the Swedes have problems understanding Norwegians, as I've experienced it. Norwegians have a different situation because, first of all, Norway has a lot of very different dialects. So Norwegians are used to listening to languages that are similar but different, which means that most Norwegians understand Danish and Swedish fairly well, even when spoken. But that does not go the other way around. Danes and Swedes do have problems understanding Norwegian. And one of the problems there, at least for my Swedish friends, they say, "You speak so fast." So Norway is the language which is probably the quickest in the spoken area.
I can read Norwegian fairly easily. Go to Norway, I find it quite difficult to understand spoken Norwegian. It's a political issue as well, isn't it? Because the Scandinavians are supposed to be able to understand each other in their own languages. There is a lot of discussion about why the Scandinavians go over to English so quickly, but that does tend to happen, doesn't it?
The issue there is, of course, who do you want to reach? If you just want to reach your own language group, no problem, use your own language. But the minute you want to go outside your own borders, you should start to think about which language do you want to communicate in. I know my blog, my Norwegian blog, has a few Swedish readers and Danish readers, but my English spoken blog has a lot more, both Swedish and Danish speak. So I know for a fact that just by using English, I did get more attention from Danes and Swedes. So and that's kind of sad, but I think perfectly natural, because we always think that if you write in your national language, it is intended for an audience in your own country. Whereas if you write in English, then it's open for all.
Do you think that the Scandinavian languages are threatened by English?
No. Not at all. This is brought home to me very, very clearly when it comes to a lot of gaming and things, where I see that the kids who game online games, they use English when they chat in an open environment, but the minute they chat with somebody they know is Norwegian, they will automatically switch. Of course, it's the abbreviated Norwegian of chatting, but and I also see it in the SMS language that it's almost a separate dialect now, how people use the instant messaging. But they do use their own language, and they abbreviate how they speak their own language. So I'm not worried at all. I think languages can coexist quite peacefully.
So the future for you is several languages, not one language dominating?
Oh, definitely. I will continue to use English in my professional blog, and I will use Norwegian when I write about Norwegian issues and how I my more personal feelings when I blog that.
Thomas, thank you very much up in Bergen. And Thomas's blog address is, of course, in our show notes. Now, names are heavily laden with cultural significance, and many societies have rules about how people should be named and to what extent they're allowed to change their names. In Denmark, the law on names recently changed to make it easier to adopt a different name. And when I read that Trine Maria Christensen had changed her name, I just had to talk to her about it and be absolutely indiscreet. And I read that you were changing your name, and this was because that Denmark has recently changed the law on names.
What I wrote was basically that when I got married to my husband last year, we both had quite boring or ordinary surnames, so we couldn't really agree on what name to pick as a surname. And then with the new law, it's now possible for anyone in Denmark to get a new name. And the rule is basically that if more than 200 people are using this surname, then it's available. Then you can have it, because then it's a custom name. So what I wrote was that I was that I had applied for a new surname and that it had finally gone through the authorities.
And what was that name that you chose for yourself?
It was the name Blockgard, meaning something like a block farm or something like that.
So why did you choose that name?
Well, because in the old days in Denmark, it was quite normal to be named after your job or maybe your status in the village or something like that. So people would have names like blacksmith or like baker or something like that. And then I thought it was quite funny to have a name with block in it.
Yeah, and you're trying to get people to use blogs more in their everyday life, in their working life. And what was the reaction of your readers?
Well, actually what happened was that this was a scam. This was not for real. It was just something I did to make, you know, to make an April's fool. I wrote the post on 1st of April. So actually what happened was that about 20 minutes after I wrote it, the first comment on the blog post was that, it's April's Fools, it can't be true. But that's maybe also because I overdid it a little bit, because I claimed that I also wanted to change my first name and that I wouldn't be called Trine Maria anymore, but Vicky instead. And Vicky is actually a common female name in Denmark, so, I mean, it could be true, but I think I overdid it there.
Actually, you had me fooled, because I didn't look at the comments for a long time.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And when did the new law come in, by the way?
Well, it went into practice on 1st of April, so it was, you know, it was obvious to blog about it and to use it in the blog post. I think they passed it about a year ago.
Okay, so thank you very much to Wikibloggard or Trine Maria Christensen. So, there you are. Why not call yourself Joe Blogger rather than Joe Smith? Carol Consultant rather than Carol Baker? Our final piece today tackles the issue of promoting understanding between disparate groups of people in a very hands-on sort of way. This initiative started in Denmark and has been repeated in several other Nordic countries, as well as Hungary and the Netherlands. This is the InfoSpeak student podcast from Seattle, and it's absolutely addictive.
They call it the Living Library. At the public library in Malmo, Sweden's third largest city, a patron can check out a person for a 45-minute chat. The idea is that with informal one-on-one dialogue, misconceptions or even prejudices about different religions, nationalities, or professions could be reduced or even eliminated. It's about the library facilitating the spirit of mutual understanding that an honest talk can bring. The plan itself is straightforward. Get individuals of clashing cultural perspectives together, talking frankly with those who don't understand them. For the library to check out people, willing to meet with those who want to know more about their mysterious lives and motives, who might want to question the sort of person who frustrates their understanding. Why has this unusual program raised a few eyebrows around the world? For one thing, offering live people as temporary items in a library collection really pushes public perception of library services to the very edge. Patrons at Malmo can check out persons such as a Muslim imam, the leader of worship in a mosque, an animal rights activist, a transvestite. It's an interesting plan, certainly iconoclastic. It dovetails with the library's mission to offer new information to all who may seek it. But why take my word for it? Let's call Malmo, Sweden, and ask the person in charge of the Living Library to talk with us about it. Ulla Bruhed, welcome to InfoSpeak. The Living Library program is a very creative one. I don't believe anything like it has ever been tried in the United States. Did you experience any controversy, any criticism, because of the unusual nature of this program?
No, not at all. On the contrary, we thought when we heard that the animal activist boy should have a chat with a chicken farmer and with a hunter, that maybe it would be sort of clash in ideas. But after having talked to each other, they both thought that their intentions were that the animals should have as a good life as possible, although one wanted to save it and the other wanted to kill. But they thought they both wanted to take care of the animals, and the chicken farmer was completely agreed with the animal activists on how to run a chicken farm.
Did Living Library program participants find it valuable?
Yes, they did. The lesbian woman said that she was a bit astonished over how little people knew about homosexuality and what prejudices they had. But she thought that the discussions were very fruitful, and she's going to join us when we're now going to have this project in December.
In consideration of Malmo, Sweden's very diverse multi-ethnic population, did you find that the Living Library program was of particular value there?
Yes, indeed. The imam, the Muslim priest, he was very much appreciated. And this time we're going to have two imams to meet the interest from the people, which we didn't have last time, to have an ex-convict. And we're going to have a homeless man who is selling newspapers outside the library, and he is homeless here in Malmö. And we're going to have a transvestite. Is that the English word for it?
Yes.
Yes. Good. That's what we're going to, which is new, and we are going to quit some of the others, the blind person and the Danish woman and the journalist.
It's my understanding that the checkout period for a human being at the Malmö Library is 45 minutes. Would it be possible for a person to become overdue?
Yes, it's 45 minutes, yes. Well, some of them wanted to talk even longer with with the ones who borrowed them, but we have to give the opportunity to as many as possible.
Ulla Bruhed from the Living Library program in Malmö, Sweden. Thank you for talking to InfoSpeak.
And if you want to find out more about how that idea went down in Seattle, then you'll just have to go to the InfoSpeak website and download the whole podcast. Well, that's it for this show. You can find the web addresses for all the items we mentioned at our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. And don't forget to add your comments, send us a voicemail, or add yourself to our Frapper map. The next show will come out on May 19th from Germany.